We're snorting cap rates and shooting up cash flow here at Deal Junkie. Welcome back to Deal Junkies. I'm Gabe Johansson here today with Trevor Howard, Mike Nuss, and Dane McKinney. We are doing a follow-up episode to talk about economics with Macro Mike. Macro Mike is fired.
We haven't talked in economics in a while.
He's also in South Salem.
In a while.
We just talked economics last week.
It's been 7 days. Mike loves
he's
economics.
Itching. Why do you think they call
Do we really talk about economics? I thought we didn't.
It was 2 weeks ago.
It was 2 weeks ago. I came in prepared and we didn't.
Kick us off. What specifically, Mike?
Well, in our last, we were just recording. You said you felt like the residential market's coming back.
It is.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a feeling. Our internal data shows that it's coming back, at least for our company. And I think that that's happening for everybody.
What's that? Is it Boston more than a feeling?
I don't know what you're talking about.
More than a
I won't sing it. So there's stats that prove it as well, in my opinion, or there's stats that can be packaged in a way because the stats are bullshit that then prove that opinion. So I left my dog is so cute that the closing lady who was signing me yesterday just got me distracted with my cute dog. I left my backpack at the title company. So I don't have a computer, so I can't break it out the actual stats. But I think from January to February, the change in days on market went up 30%. So days on market, based on February stats, 89 days on market, significantly high. So for relativity for people that are listening there, during COVID, days on market in the summer got down to like 20 days. After COVID, up to 40. We ended the year at 60, which was really high, and then we jumped up to 89. So a 30% increase. But at the same time, so you can use that and say days on market are increasing, inventory's growing, market's going down. Like the typical frame on that is that's bad for the market. Mm-hmm. The other component that you look at, though, is at that same time frame from January to February, I'm pretty sure it's January to February, median sales price increased 5%. So my question then is, have buyers capitulated? And no one answered because I don't think people understand what capitulated means.
Yeah, they have. They have. So they've shifted gears, and their mindset, I believe, is that we're out of the woods. We won't see rates come down for a little while, but we're not going to see them go up.
Yeah.
And we're not going into the recession we thought maybe we might go into. Mm-hmm. And now it feels like your friends aren't going to make fun of you if you go buy a house right now.
Oh. So it's sentiment driven?
I believe it is. What do you think?
Oh, 100%. And that's what I've been trying to say along. Like, it is affordability. Math matters. Interest rates matter. Prices matter in that way. But sentiment drives all of that. Mm-hmm. And so we teeter around, well, is it 85% the affordability? Does that make trans? But it's the sentiment that says 83 works, or it's a sentiment that says 87 works. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And it's that triggering point. It's that tipping point. And when I pointed out those two stats, because if you add a time frame to them. Again, that's why I love time and time constructs. So if it was sold in February, it went in escrow in January, and it had an average of 89 days on market. So that's December, November, October, and it's an average. So some of those averages were stuff that was listed in early January and December and late November, which means you have stuff from September and August that are making up this data pool. And so the increase in days on market are sellers saying, hey, I'm just not lowering my price. I'm not coming down. You're going to need to come meet me, or at least come close to me. And now it's those sellers have sold. And that's why that days on market has increased so much. And because the median sales price went up, that's saying that the buyers are going towards the sellers. The sellers are not coming down towards the buyers.
And there might be a combo a little bit. I think there's some conversation, especially in the commercial world, that in the grieving process of this last cycle, we're finally in the acceptance stage where we go, okay, you know, we felt like our building was worth X and we didn't want to believe that maybe it could go down 10 or 15 or 20%. Mm-hmm. And now we're saying, okay, it's time to transact. We want to go do another deal. We really need to sell this property, or my loan's coming due. And now we have a reason to go, okay, let's get realistic about it. We're going to sell. We're not going to hang on to this pie in the sky number. There's going to be some discounts. So I think from a residential standpoint, most of the people selling residential have a different perspective on the market. They have a different need. This is usually a very big difference in their life once that money goes in their pocket or they're trying to buy another home or whatever that is. So I think sellers also get to the point where they're not like, we'll put an apartment complex on the market and we'll say, yeah, it's a $9 million building, but let's put it out at 10 and see what happens. You can sit there a year, whatever. We're not that motivated. We'll deal with it. Maybe we'll lower the price down a little later. When you put a house on the market, you're not just testing the market typically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You really have a reason to sell. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you can't because you owe too much or there's something else going on there. But if you're just hanging on, I think the emotionality of residential will drive the values of those homes down. So to your point, is the market coming back because of buyers or because of sellers? I would say I think the sellers are probably offering a little more in concessions, maybe a little more closing costs. Maybe the prices have come down just a little, but I think that buyers are making up more than 50% of that gap between where we were because they're saying, hey, the market's looking a little bit better. We believe, and brokers have done a really good job. If you pull up Facebook, and I'm friends with hundreds of brokers, they're all saying the same thing, like, buy a house now at 6.75% interest because at the end of the year, we're going to be at 5.75 and you're going to have 15 times the buyers in the market than are here today. If you can afford today, don't wait because we're going to go back. As soon as rates start to come down, mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot more competition and the prices are going to go up. Mm-hmm. So I think, I mean, you tell me, but I've read in a couple of places, people that I trust, that home prices will go up 10% over the next 12 to 18 months.
I'd clarify on behalf of Gabe, when there were buyers brokers saying that like a year and a half ago, it made my skin crawl because rates had gone up 2.5%, but they were still at like 5%.
Yeah.
And when I saw somebody post, marry the house, date the rate, I was like, no, you're probably marrying both. Like, I don't think either of those are going lower than that anytime
soon. You're
going
to be dating for a couple of years.
Yeah, understand how long that cycle is.
And that relationship may not work out.
You really want to date her for 2 years when you thought it was a 2-week event?
Yeah. No, that was going to be yeah. So anyways, to your point, I think now that the light is at the end of the tunnel, that's a fair statement to make.
Yeah, I think inflation will be around a little bit longer. High rates will be around a little bit longer. Mike talks about this stuff way more eloquently than I do, but I agree with all the data points that we are going to be in a longer, you know, higher for longer type of a era here. The point is, though, is that we're not all sitting around wondering if we're going back to 20% interest rates. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. that is old news now. Like that was what was keeping the market from transacting on both commercial and residential.
So good. Okay. So I don't follow data a lot because I think you look past it.
I have seen your slideshows.
Trevor GPT says you're lying. He did a fact check. Mike does rely on data.
Every time I open Facebook, first one is Mike Nush with some data about something.
No, okay, I'm going to hit that one right from the get-go. I rarely share data.
He does.
I share opinions a lot.
He shares a lot of opinions.
You propose your opinions as data then.
Tell you what, he's also
because my opinion should be fucking data. It's that good.
Everything we say on this podcast is not true.
So this is why I hate economics like podcast and people, because you have to say, you're essentially 4 or 5 talking points that happen throughout the year. But if you have an economic podcast once a week, you have to beat that over bush, right? So there's big comments that came out the year, and I want to pose a question to you at the end.
Does that say shopping list?
It is my shopping
list. Hold up your comments on your shopping list.
Bananas. Okay.
All right, go ahead. What do you got?
What's the price of bananas today, Mike? He's tracking the cost of food on his phone.
PCE. Hey, this is what ADHD does. Okay. I'm going to start with a comment. This was February of 23, I think. Neil Kashkari was on CNBC and he said 6% mortgage rates are problematic to the real estate market. Mm-hmm. So he's one of the Fed presidents. He's got some title at the Fed, so it matters. And so he's on CNBC. About mid-year last year, Powell said the bond market is doing our job for us. That's when it hit around 5%. That's when I started making a lot of claims. Just last week, one of the executive guys from PIMCO said, PIMCO's one of the biggest bond buyers in the market, by the way.
Trevor knows.
Because he got the bond.
I read it in
he read the
bond
book.
Yeah.
So his comment was 4.5% is the new 5%. on 10-year yield coming down, right? So essentially last summer, 5% was the top. That was when the 10-year bond was worth its least. So the yield was the highest. And now he's saying that that's now down to 4.5%.
So 4.5 is doing the Fed's job for them?
Yes.
That's
thank
in February
you for correlating
of,
this.
Of yes. last year? This is a year ago?
No, so this is just the last week. So a year ago.
It was 5.
When it was almost 5, Jerome Powell came out and said, the bond market's doing our job for us. And that's when I said the 10-year won't go above 5. Mm-hmm. Now we fast forward that to where we're at. You have PIMCO saying 4.5% is the new 5%. And so what he's saying is the environment that existed last summer at 5% now exists now. At 4.5%.
So does that mean we won't see the Fed start lowering rates until we see the 10-year go to 4.5?
That might be it.
Because we're at 4.3.
That's a, yeah.
And it keeps vacillating between 4.1 and 4.3 on the bet that we get a June rate discount.
I like that thought process. And now I have to unpack that. What I was looking at it is that's kind of the backstop of what the 4.5, the yield, the 10-year yield's not really going to get above the 4.5. Just like I made a claim it won't get above 5. Now it's not going to get the past 4.5. So this is the bond market trickling down. And what I wanted to get into is this is what the Fed wants. Doesn't the Fed want the bond market making decisions based on their own interpretation of what's happening in the marketplace rather than what the Fed's going to do in the reaction?
So my reaction to that, my opinion would be that if it goes to 4.5, then the Fed is going to come out and start giving more dovish talk. They're not going to actually lower the rates. They're just going to start talking about lowering them more. We'll find out tomorrow. The Fed's in a meeting right now as we speak.
Exactly.
And they're going to come out of their meeting tomorrow and they're going to say whatever they're going to say. If they come out and they say, hey, I think-
I already know what they're coming out to say.
They're going
to
say, we're not lowering them.
I already know. I already know.
Okay, tell us what.
Okay, they're coming dovish. They want to say dovish. But the problem is every time they come dovish, the market smacks them in the face and they have to get hawkish. What's on their agenda to talk about tomorrow? Stopping or tapering off their reduction of their balance sheet.
Yeah, the runoff. You're talking about quantitative tightening.
Which they guess is
going to happen at the end of this year?
Yeah. So it's literally the same conversation that they had in 2018, but we're double the pace. So in 2018, they were tapering off their balance sheet and it was the taper tantrum and it was the stock market got into a point. And the Bloomberg article that I read, they said until they changed in November, or until they changed in 2019. They didn't change anything in 2019. The yield curve inverted in November and it forced a change, and they had the gunpowder at the time because they were trickling down there. So now they can start bond buying again. They can lower interest rates again. We are in 2019 again. That is my opinion. We're just waiting for something to happen.
So what happens next? Give us a prediction. Is the Fed then going to... You think they're going to come out of their meeting tomorrow. They're going to be more dovish. Mm. They're going to say, hey, guys, I think things are looking really good. We're ready to start talking about lowering rates. We don't know exactly when or how much.
I don't think they're going to be that dovish. No. I think they're...
He's kind of already saying that.
That is a good
Jerome Powell is kind of already saying that we think we're done raising for sure. We've proved that over the last 3 or 4 meetings. And now they're saying that at some point this year, they want to start lowering. I mean, the dot plot has them at, 75 bips drop?
Correct.
And the market hit them at 1.5, at double what their dot plot showed, which is why you saw the yields and everything come down. So now we're back. I believe that there's a 50% bet that the Fed will lower rates in June. And it was an 80 to 85% bet that they would do that in June. Mm-hmm. So we get 3 quarter-point drops. They could always just hold off a little longer, wait for something to break, and then drop faster, which now you see the news of like Dollar General's closing 1,000 stores.
Right.
Well,
Dollar General's opening 1,000 stores.
No.
Dollar Tree.
Dollar Tree.
Isn't
the same thing?
What's the... Dollar General. No, it's nuts.
Dollar Tree.
Because I read the same article and one of them was closing 1,000 and the other's opening like 2,800 or something.
We should just broker that. You
so the
buy
dollar...
The ones,
I know.
This is
we gotta
exactly
sell buy
where I'm getting
so
to.
Serious.
Like, there's so much money in the world that one closing of one large asset holder in one industry just gets gobbled up by the other one.
So now you really... What you have to look at is the banks.
I think that's really what
they're opening?
Yeah, it's Dollar General's opening 800 stores and then Dollar
Tree.
Or what's the other? There's the
I thought it was Dollar Tree.
Dollar General's opening, Dollar Store is closing.
I thought they're all owned by
the
same.
They're not. I did too.
There's Dollar General, Dollar Tree,
yeah,
Dollar,
like
Dollar.
Family Dollar is like a low, there's like different tiers of the, you probably haven't been there in a while, Gabe, okay? There's tiers of that stuff. There's Five Below as well, which all is right. Anyway.
I had my period of time ago in there.
So, okay.
It wasn't all that long ago.
Give us your prediction. Where does the Fed go from here? Where do yields, you know, 10-year treasury go from here? One thing I want to ask you about is risk pricing, because I noticed that in the residential market, if you look at the spread in the risk pricing, it's dropping, it's coming down, and that's affecting interest rates. So even if the Fed doesn't come out with dovish talk or lowering rates, we're still going to see interest rates come down because the risk pricing is going to come out. Right?
Exactly.
So this is your expertise to go off on a tangent.
I wouldn't say this is my expertise, but I follow it and I can understand it a little bit. And so when we hit that 5% top, the spreads were 3%. That's why interest rates were at 8%. And so now if 4.5 is the new 5, and now 2.5 is the new 3, now we're at 7% interest rates as the top. Assuming nothing changes from an actual economic standpoint, which then puts pressure on the Fed to change, right? And that comes again to the pivot. A pivot is a multi-step pivot. And so they've pivoted into neutral. They've been in neutral for a while. And I still think they want to hold on to neutral for a while. And this is where, because the inflation reports lately have been going against them.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, why do I think they're going to be dovish is because you listen to what they say. And last week, what did they say? It's going to be bumpy coming. We don't expect every report to go the direction we think it's going. Yeah. It's going to be bumpy. We're going to have reports that say we're not going the right direction and we're going to stay calm and we're not going to react to that.
So I've read that the risk spread in a residential mortgage historically runs at about 170 bips, 1.7%. And so you're saying we went from 3% down to 2.5%. To make it back to something more like a 2 or a 1.7, what do you think needs to happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I started to do some research on spreads and then I got distracted with building a business. That's the worst. That's why I don't look at stats. Dude, it takes too long. My business is more important.
And building a business, distracting you?
Trevor's, from looking at stats.
Trevor's million-dollar idea. Yeah.
I said this once. So most people let stats keep them, or some people can't get out of an analysis paralysis to go buy a deal. I get sidetracked by economics to actually do that to go buy. Anyways, what was the question?
What does it take to get the spread down?
Yeah,
from
the Fed.
To 150
yeah.
To
so this, the, to yeah, and so that 1.7 average, again, based on my, I spent 15 minutes on this when I went to do. It's Fed driven, and it's because there's such a period of time where the Fed was buying, keeping those rates down, that I don't believe 1.7 is the real average.
Yeah.
So let's say it's 2, though.
Yeah.
And we're at 2.5. What tells the banks? Because there's obviously competition. As more buyers come in, more sellers come down, there's more deals happening, there will be FOMO. Mm-hmm. There will be, here's your list of 1,000 banks, 100 of them want to do business again. And then the other 900 are going to go, well, wait a second, they're doing deals. We want to do deals. Mm-hmm. And they're going to jump back in. And that competition is going to drive that. It's going to force them to drive that risk pricing down.
Exactly.
But what I'm curious to know is, like, what sort of mental masturbation are they doing behind the scenes where they're saying, well, this metric and this president and this economy and this is what leads us to believe we can really lower that risk spread.
And it's the liquidity conversation. That's all it is. So last week they came out, they are now, I think I even mentioned this maybe 2 weeks ago, where their plan was to make the big banks increase the reserves by 20%. So the first thing they did, or just recently, we're not going to do that. That's off the table. Big banks, you can have plenty of liquidity. We're not taking your liquidity away. So now you can go make loans.
Was that all staged just to get the market to do something?
Ooh.
Or do you think that's real? They really,
well, okay. Really, so the timing, they threw it out there in the summer of 23 when they were being pretty damn hawkish. That was like the culmination of their hawkishness. Wow.
Seems, I mean, it's conspiracy theory talk, but you wonder how much bad press they leak out in order to drive the markets without actually having to make
moves.
They have
to. Well, because they know that everything they say is how it's driven. And we thought that...
Because we talked about this. If we were the Fed, what would we do?
Yeah. Yep.
That's what we would do. We would say, hey, we don't actually want to raise rates or lower rates, but we want the market to do this. Mm-hmm. So we need this headline.
We have to say this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where the capitulation starts to come from. It feels like we're all... The buyers in the residential side are coming in. The bond buyers are kind of settling down. The mortgages, the secondary markets, does that... So when we go back to the residential markets come back, 10-year yield seems like it has a cap to it. Mortgage spreads seem like they have a cap to it. We're no longer in the fall and winter sentiment period. We're in the spring buying. Like, it just feels like...
But this market coming back, if in this last campaign, this last couple of years, it feels... And maybe it's just because I'm in real estate, but it feels like it was a full-on assault on our industry.
100%.
They came after us. I mean, this was full-on after...
So that goes back to that first comment, Neil Kashkari, 6% mortgage rates are problematic to the economy. And that's my question to you.
So you're saying once we get to 6, it's a problem...
Are 6% mortgage rates in the residential world problematic to our economy?
Not if they happen next year.
Not to you.
I think if they happen too quickly,
yes,
we're already seeing home prices go up 5%.
Yeah,
we're already seeing the deal volume come back.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of just like the stock market getting out ahead of itself a little mm-hmm. bit, but it's also fighting against what the Fed wants to see before they lower rates. So this is sort of like the opposite of a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like we're saying we know rates are going to come down, so we're going to go ahead and get back in. But the more people that get back in, the longer it's going to take for those rates to come down, I think.
Yeah. And that's the dilemma the Fed's in.
This is
they need more pain. We need more pain, but it's not intuitive for the Fed to create that pain. Like they are more like, I think I've heard you say, like they were sort of designed to prop us up mm-hmm. and to help.
They work best when we have pain.
They're there to relieve pain more than to create pain, right? And so their standard position is, yes, we would like to bring rates down. Yes, we think that we have enough restrictive policy in place now to bring the economy down and to settle this market down. Mm-hmm. And so the more they say that, though, the more things start to come back before we actually make any real moves. And then they're like, oops, we can't really say that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to come out of their meeting tomorrow and they're going to do the same shit. It's all data driven. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen it come down to where we want. We want to see that this is sustainable. We really want to get down to that 2% number. And I really believe, and I mentioned this to a banker friend of mine, I really believe that their target is more like 2.5% inflation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think they've already shifted that behind the scenes, but they haven't announced it yet. And I think we'll hear that announcement.
And they'll go to a range. When they actually settle, they'll say, we're no longer going for a number. We're going for a range.
Yeah, we want to fall in the 2 to 2.5% range, let's say.
Yeah.
And as long as we're averaging out somewhere in that range, we're okay. And then we can get back to some. So, you know, go ahead.
I said something smart.
I agree with you. I want to go hot takes with Dane talking about things that I don't probably totally understand and see where you guys go with it, because I know you'll both know something about it. In terms of the 6% being a problem for mortgage rates, I think it is. I think too much of our economy over the past 4 years was based off of non-productive assets. We got too many loans for non-productive assets. We got too many loans for things that already existed, and we don't have enough loans for productive things, such as small businesses. But
so from real the perspective, quick instant reaction. So this is probably wrong.
Okay.
Can I give you instant reaction?
Give it to me.
Okay. So much of our GDP was baked off of asset values. And if our real estate market is 23% of our GDP, and now those asset values are appreciating, so now you have GDP growing without productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much arguments of a recession and GDP's mm-hmm. got to go down. Well, now you're switching away from asset growth to actual productivity, mm-hmm. right? As government spending's increasing mm-hmm. because all the bills that have been passed. And so, and AI... So our productivity is now increasing as those asset values have already been taken out of the economy. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So now we're 18 months in, the increase of asset values have been slowly mm-hmm. gotten out of our GDP mm-hmm. readings while productivity has slowly crept in.
Do you know what that means?
That could all be wrong, by the way. I'm just, this is, yeah.
No, I agree.
It means we're changing to a better fucking economy.
That's what we need to do.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it means that interest rates shouldn't go lower. They shouldn't. For us, it feels like they should. But in the next 3 to 7 years, all commercial debt is going to expire, and our job is going to get done. We're gonna have a job no matter what, because the sellers cycle. Will have to capitulate. We don't need to lower rates so that we can do commercial deals in the next year.
But it's not 1-to-1. When you talk about the Fed lowering the rate, they're not in full control, because these mortgage rates can go down without the Fed doing
yes. Anything. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. I would say this though. COVID consolidated a commercial cycle. Commercial loan cycles were spread out into an entire cycle. And commercial cycles are driven by the shorter 10-year debt period. And everyone, for the majority of that, put 1/3 of that 10-year cycle into a 2-year period of time.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I mean, how much, when you say real estate values make up 23% of GDP,
yeah.
is that commercial and residential?
Yeah. I think so. I've always used a number of like 20%, is that's what I remember, because statistics are bullshit. But I recently saw it was either 23 or 27.
And 20.
I don't know if it's I'm the entire real estate. It's commercial. It's got to be commercial residential.
Because arguably the residential went up 5%, but the commercial went down 20%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you're in office, it went down 50%.
Well, and that's the thing. So you full on assault on the real estate. Easiest asset class to affect, and they went on an assault on the real estate, which is 1/5 of our GDP, mm-hmm. and we survived.
Who, the country?
Yeah.
not all real estate professionals.
Again,
survive.
You know, it's balancing morals for greed. It sucked for us, but wasn't that better for the economy?
I don't know. I'm only worried about myself, like Trevor. I'm only doing good things for people, so it comes back to me.
And then I'm also not, if you think of, but there's an opposite discussion to be had. If you lower the cost to own a home, you take demand out of the rental market, which then you alleviate cost of living in the rental side, because rental rates are coming down because demand's come down, and you've locked in better housing costs by mortgages, 30-year mortgages at a lower rate. So if you lower rates to 6%, you can lower the cost of housing on both sides of the equation.
And it's my understanding that the Fed went away from the value of real estate and went to the rent equivalent, right? So mm-hmm. they're looking at a house. They're not looking so much that it went up 5%. They're looking at what it would be to rent that house.
Right.
And that's what's affecting their CPI or PCE mm-hmm. or whatever, however that's equated mm-hmm. in there. I don't know if that's in both of them.
Yeah, you change the package is what changes the target.
So they're really looking at the bottom line of Main Street America and what it costs to live in a home, less than the speculative nature of the way, you know, we're out buying real estate with the hopes that it goes up in right. value.
It's all made up.
So, yeah. I don't know if there's value there, but that was fun.
I have more questions than answers.
No, you guys yeah. have a minute left on your 30-minute timer. So
so to end it, I think the Fed will test with a dovish statement. They haven't come dovish since December. The markets ran off. They came back, brought the markets in. So now it's time to test again. So they're going to test with dovish comments.
So what do I do with this information?
You buy bonds right now because their value is going to go, right?
Yep.
Dovish, but yes.
Value will
yes,
go up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you don't short bonds, you buy bonds.
What about real estate?
Go long.
I don't buy bonds. I like real estate.
Well, yeah. You buy stock because dovish talk then pushes the stock market up.
So I'm going to do nothing with this information.
Yeah, because you don't care, because you buy real estate, which is on longer time cycles. Yeah.
No, I'm going to buy some bonds. But I'm actually going to short your bonds because I disagree with everything
so
you just said.
Make your million.
Oh, is that the hot take of the day?
That's and now we need to end it.
And he's going to leave me at that for the next week.
I got a whole week to think about that.
I got to think on that for a week.
All right. Well, boy, we sure are having fun today. We're glad you joined us for this episode of Deal Junkies. And we look forward to seeing you next time.